Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Coach Kelly.
Kelly, it's unbelievable. We're at the end of the year.
I know.
Thanksgiving this week. I can't even believe it.
That's so weird, right?
It feels like I blinked.
I know. I feel the same way.
Oh, this year went so fast. You know, they say, sadly, that the older you get, the faster time goes. So
yes,
it's still slower for you than it is for me, but someday you'll be saying the exact same thing.
No, it feels fast. I can't even imagine.
Oh, my gosh. It just whizzes by, but it is Thanksgiving.
I remember when I was a kid, like, yeah, it felt so slow. Like, I remember, like, waiting for my birthday to come around. It was, like, painful. And now it's like, wait, what? Another birthday? It's kind of crazy.
So I'm going to be really serious for a minute because I know there's so many horrible things going on in the world right now and so many people suffering with all their losses. So I just want to say in front of you and in front of our audience that I am so grateful and thankful to have a nice home and a nice family and health and wellness. And I just, my heart just bleeds for those who are having to get through this trauma and the experiences in Europe and over other parts of the world. So I am so grateful to be here and to be able to see your face.
Oh, that's so sweet. Me too. And I'm saying prayers and we're really blessed.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know, didn't want to start on such a dark
note, but
it's so important
to acknowledge and I totally agree. Yeah.
So for anybody who's experiencing a loss or a reactivation of fear for some of the trauma that we all went through here in the U.S. in 2011. In 9 September 2001. My goodness. Anyway, blessings to everybody. Yeah. And we all ought to be grateful and thankful if we have a nice life and we're settled
it's
with
true.
So many good things. I think it's time to be grateful and stop complaining and whining.
Yes, exactly. It's so true. But let me tell you about my son's potty training.
Please. Oh, my goodness.
Can I whine about this?
Yes.
Please. The guy needs to go to the bathroom, tells me when he has to go, is holding his crotch like Michael Jackson, and will not go to the bathroom. He won't go on the potty. I think he's scared.
Is he afraid?
Yes.
He's got the little port mini potty?
Yes. He's got a mini potty. He's got a big potty. I got a Dora seat. I got a Cars potty that flushes. Like, I mean, I have everything in their mother. Like, I mean...
Does he look scared when you take him to it?
Yeah. And I don't know what it is. And I'm like, so he has yet to actually pee on the potty. I mean, he will tell me when he has to go. The pee-pee's coming out is what he says. Okay, quick, let's do the potty. I even got food coloring. I'm like, oh, maybe you'd like to see how the pee-pee can change color. Like, I have thought of everything possible.
What about if David actually does this with him?
We tried David. I've tried Remy, his older brother.
Showing him how to do it and all that, and that it's
everything.
Safe and the flush and all that.
His wife is going to have to potty train him.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm over it.
Oh, my goodness.
And you know, I'm going to this resort Thursday, and I don't know what I'm going to do.
Do you think he could be intuitively sensing your anxiety about needing him to do this now?
I was trying, like, I'm not pushing it too much. Like, I'm not, like even my babysitter was like, come on. Like, I mean, she doesn't know that I'm, like, pushing for the kids club, but she's kind of pushing him more than I am. I'm backing off a little bit because I was thinking the same thing, that maybe he senses it, you know? But he's a little stubborn dude, you know? He's kind of like, if I want to piss in my diaper, like, so be it, you know?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, he is stubborn. All right, well, you know what? I think you're going to have to just take a deep breath and let it go, and that the chances of you getting that kind of retreat that you were looking for
is probably
not going to happen.
No.
So that you don't put that pressure on him because you don't want to create that negative association.
Yes.
And you could call that pediatrician we had on the show, Dr.
Oh, yes.
He was great. Baby care anywhere.
Yes, he's lovely.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got some good tips.
I think so.
I need a potty coach.
You need a potty coach. Maybe our guest that we had last week, our Rachel Melliman, the doctor, board certified veterinarian behaviorist, can help you with your child, right? He's an animal, right?
Is he
different than an animal?
No, he's not. But I think he's harder to train.
Oh, my gosh. She was awesome, by the way. So if you missed that show, please make sure to tune that one in from last week. And I've actually been practicing with Puppy Cat, ignoring his little nibble biting behavior.
How's it going?
Well, he looks at me and stares at me like, why are you ignoring me? And a few times I've actually just pushed him to the side, and I just completely ignore him. So he's doing a little bit better. I will keep you posted.
Good. That's great. I'm glad you put it to use. I got the toy that she recommended for Moose.
You did?
And
good.
It's been great.
Awesome.
Yeah. So she's been super helpful.
So she was delightful. So go back and listen to that show. And if you would like to give us a call today, we have two great guests. And we'll tell you about the first one in just a moment. But our phone number is 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And you can email us anytime. And, of course, like us on Facebook and Twitter and all those other good things. Because we want to be able to tell people. We have so many people following us. It's fun.
Part of society.
Okay, so our first guest today is Dr. Peter Preskop. He's been doing research and developing his alternative model for managing chronic pain for more than 10 years, four of them with the Chronic Pain Clinic at the Betty Ford Center, and he's published a number of research papers on the subject. He is the author of Conquer Chronic Pain. Welcome, Dr. Peter.
Thank you very much.
Oh, my gosh. We're so happy to hear that you could come on the show because, you know what, I have chronic pain, and I'd love to get some information, more information about that. Yeah, I had an accident, so to speak, with my daughter when I was teaching her how to ride a bike years ago. And I did the mother bear adrenaline rush thing. She was starting to fall to the right. I took one hand, my right hand. I literally picked her up and put her back up before she fell on the bike.
And you damaged
And then the next day I had to go to New York and I was walking and I like my back just froze. I was in a wheelchair for 3 days. I couldn't walk.
So
on and off since then, you know, and I was a runner and did all those things. So I definitely have the lower back pain issues that come up now and again. So Dr. Peter, tell me what to do.
Well, chronic pain is simply defined as pain that has been present for 3 months or more. And over the last 20 years, we realized that when pain converts from acute to chronic, it's a disease of the brain and mind. So I realized that I had to come up with a treatment that treated that instead of the area that it hurts. Traditionally, we're trained to treat the area that it hurts, but it doesn't work. That's kind of the approach. And the approach for me is people have the ability to heal. The mind, the brain, the body has the ability to heal. So what is it about every individual that is keeping them from being able to heal? And what is it that I have to do to get them back to that place of healing? That's all I do.
Okay, well, that's good stuff. So actually, I probably wouldn't qualify as chronic pain. I have intermittent pain that comes up generally when I've overdone something or haven't been sensitive to my posture or lifting things and things like that. So do you believe in chiropractic?
Yes, great question.
I believe in chiropractic, but you have to keep in mind each chiropractor has a different level of skill. So it isn't like taking medication that's pretty much the same. So you have to be sure that you have someone that is adapted to the problems that you have.
I see.
You know, I'm fascinated if you could explain some more of what are the three minds and how do they process pain?
Well, the three minds are kind of an arbitrary way I came up with of explaining how the mind works when someone has chronic pain. As you know, we've been studying the mind for 2,000 years plus. We really don't know a lot about it. But one mind is the intellectual mind, the one that we stay in most of the time. And that's the one that analyzes, tries to get all the information from the world and figure out what's going on. This is the one that allows us to accomplish our job, to do well academically. But for people with chronic pain, it's kind of gone awry, where it's kind of out of control and may actually be causing more problems than good. There's the emotional mind where there's a lot of emotional input. So some of it can be happy, joyous. Some of it can be not. With chronic pain, most of the emotional input is negative. There's a lot of bad stuff because if you're experiencing pain all the time, the world gets to be viewed as not so fun. And then there's what Dr. Paul Brunton in 1934 called the over-self. And that's the mind where people can heal.
And say that again, it the takes over a lot what? Of, I'm sorry?
It's the mind where people have the ability to heal. And it's actually a quiet mind.
Oh.
When the intellectual mind, through practice, becomes quiet, the body has the ability to begin to heal on its own.
Would that be through that, meditation?
I was thinking that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can use mindfulness techniques. There's a lot of different techniques you can use. I mean, there's hundreds of mindfulness techniques out there. The ones I teach are couched in Qigong. I took the Transcendental Meditation class at age 14, so I've been doing that for a long time. I think that one's great, too. But any mindfulness or meditation technique that people can do that can help them to quiet the stress response and quiet the mind can actually begin to help them to heal. Because if you think about it, people with chronic pain, instead of being able to take attention and put it on what they want to, attention has been captured by the perceived sensation of pain.
That makes sense.
Oh, it's just tragic. I'm actually working with this young woman who she had this terrible accident with her bicycle and she broke her collarbone. But she had been a gymnast in her earlier years, and she also had, you know, sort of created a lot of injuries, compressed discs and pinched nerves. And she, you know, she's in her 20s and she's such an active person. And now she suffers so badly. Mm. And it's almost like she was saying to me, she says, you know, I wake up every day and I'm now so afraid of the pain that it's going to come back in such a rush that I'm now afraid to do everything. And so she's then created this whole anxiety cycle in addition to that many days she really doesn't have that bad of a pain experience, but she's so afraid of it now.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. That's exactly what happens when acute pain converts to chronic pain. All the negative emotional stuff, catastrophizing, ruminating on pain, overwhelms the mind and brain and brings you to a state of chronic pain. That's the stuff I actually treat instead of, it hurts here, let's try and figure out why.
Right.
And that treatment strategy has actually been pretty successful.
And my question to you about opiates, because I know most people just, you know, their back hurts, they, you know, pop a pain pill. What are your thoughts about that?
There's been many, many outcome studies on people with chronic non-cancer pain using opioids of types, and they can be helpful maybe for 3 months. After 3 months, the brain reorganizes in such a way that they actually turn against people. And as you know, that there's a huge problem we have in our country for people overusing them.
Sure.
People becoming addicts.
There's
a lot of recent studies that show, independent of pain, being on opiates for a prolonged amount of time, which means 6 months, creates a depression. They change a lot of the stress response, change endocrine function, change the gut. People can't sleep. But probably the worst part for chronic pain patients, if you take them for 2 or 3 weeks, you're dependent on them, which means that if you stop them abruptly, you're going to get sick and go into withdrawals. And chronic pain patients don't have a lot of freedom. And if you take that freedom away, it's just not cool.
Absolutely. I saw so much of that in the rehabs where I worked with so many people came in, not for just regular old recreational drugs, but that a doctor had prescribed them. For too long of a period of time, opiates, and then every time they tried to stop, they were so sick, and they felt worse, and the pain was worse also because they had the tolerance, too, to the opiates, so they weren't as effective, and then if they took more to be effective, they were complete zombies and couldn't function.
Oh. Catch 22.
Every time I've ever been prescribed like Percocet or anything like that for something, the most I've ever taken is 1.5 total.
Yep.
Because then I get constipated.
Yes.
And it's
me
like,
too.
I don't like this. But for other for other brains, that it's such a teaser. They get so happy with that experience. Yes. It's so hard to say no.
I was so scared to take my Percocet. I remember that when after my C-section, I was like terrified that I would get addicted because it's like, oh, this is pretty cool. You know, but it's terrifying.
I will have to say, though, that when I was pregnant with Tiffany and I was in delivery, and my delivery lasted forever, and it was very intense, and I and all this, and then I went from, like, a dilation of 5 to 10 in, like, less than 20 minutes, and they came in to give me the epidural, because I finally broke down and said, I'll take it, I'll take it. They said, I'm sorry, it's too late. So, but they did give me a shot of Darvocet, and I'll tell you, man, I could have easily become an addict. I could have had that. Whenever I was upset, I was like, oh, that was, that felt
nice.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Short-lived, though, but yes.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, so what about muscle relaxers? Is that a helpful tool, and for how long?
It can be helpful in the acute phase, but if muscle relaxers are used for a prolonged amount of time, it can become the same as opiates. You become dependent on them, and it can create more anxiety and sleep. I think it's important to note, and I have this in the book, and we've done a lot of studies, and a lot of other groups have been doing studies, that people who go into chronic pain, especially the severe debilitating pain, if you ask them, there is something during their lifetime that they've experienced that is still unresolved.
Oh.
Some sort of a traumatic event, a bad accident, something has happened. And I also see kids at Loma Linda, Children's Hospital on Monday, and the big thing for them who have converted to chronic pain is something has happened that has left, that they're being bullied at school, someone has abused them. So there's something about that event that creates chronic stress and negative emotions that is an entry point for chronic pain.
Sure.
In all the studies on addicts, it's the same thing. Something has become negative that doesn't feel okay inside. The brain mind becomes overwhelmed with all these negative emotions, and that's the entry point for becoming an addict. So it's interesting stuff.
Yeah, fascinating. I'm so glad that you do this work for people because there's so many people out there who just suffer. And then there's also, maybe we can just end with a little discussion also about secondary gain. Is that something that you see a lot of, that people, like, they almost get comfortable and attached to their pain because it gets them more attention or things like that?
Yeah, it's a little complex because we as doctors tell people that they have a chronic disease that's associated with a pain, and that they'll always have it. So they almost get accustomed to a lifestyle of pain. And if you see people who have been in pain for a while, there's almost like this chronic pain behavior personality type that they have. An interesting study was done in Europe where they brought in a group of women who had fibromyalgia, had them clean a window and videoed them, had their spouse come in and clean a window. And when their spouse was there, the pain behavior increased tenfold, where they were groaning and couldn't sit up straight. So,
really?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's a conscious thing or sort of a learned thing. It's hard to say that these people want to be in pain because they're getting some sort of a gain, but could it be something that has happened in the past where they didn't get the attachment or the love that they wanted? And this is kind of a maladaptive coping of being in pain so they get attention.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Probably a largely unconscious, but I've seen that happen with people.
Wow.
It's really interesting. I saw that happen with my dad, who passed 4 years ago. Oh. The last 3 years of his life, once he was having more trouble walking, and then he had to have a walker, and he was getting a lot more attention in certain ways. And he would, it would be fascinating how he would say, oh, I call him on the phone. I go, Dad, how are you today? He goes, I'm in pain. Yeah. Oh, okay, where is the pain?
Yeah.
How bad is the pain? And then, like, we'd get into a conversation and go, how are you feeling? He goes, I feel great. It was like, oh, but he learned how to lead with the I'm in pain because it would get me, I think, in his mind, to make sure I called him constantly. How are you doing? If he said he was fine, maybe I'd miss a day.
That's so
and
interesting.
He loved that extra connection.
Attention. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Peter, we're going to wrap up in a minute, but can you just tell us where, you know, they can people can find your book and anything else, any last parting words you want to say?
I think that the book is on Amazon. It's on the Hazleton's website. I think it can be obtained online. If anybody wants to contact me, feel free to contact me through my email at pprzekop@llu.edu. And I hope that we start to get some sort of a trend or change in how we treat people with chronic pain. Because
Absolutely.
Our current treatments just are not optimal. And I hope that there's a whole sort of a shift. And instead of maintaining people in the disease state and treating symptoms, actually help people to go towards wellness, balance, and healing. That's the thing I figured out how to do. And in 5 years, I've gotten 68 people out of wheelchairs.
Wonderful. Yeah, and I can see why, because you have a very soothing and calming presence to you, and I'm sure that that's very comforting and reassuring to your patients. So they're lucky to have you. Anybody who missed this part, the name of the book is Conquer Chronic Pain with Dr. Peter Preskop. Thank you so much for the interview, and we wish you great success with the book and mostly with just continuing to heal people.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Wow.
So interesting, right?
Do you have any of your own experiences with any kind of chronic pain or people in your family?
God.
Thank God, no.
Knock on wood, I'm scared now. But no, I mean, but ironically, it's so funny you said that, because our mattress, we got a new mattress about 3 years ago, and I feel like now lately I've been sleeping on a hammock. It has completely caved, and I've never really had back problems. And I said to David, I'm like, ow, my back's really hurting. So I know it's from the mattress, so we just purchased a new one.
Oh, good. But, and you know to turn your mattress. You know, you have to rotate it and all that,
well,
so you don't get
like,
your butts in the same place all the time.
Yes, exactly. No, that's a good point. But like, it is like a lumpy, like, it's like oatmeal. It's like sleeping on, I might as well just have my breakfast in bed, you know?
Oh my gosh. We actually have extra lumps in our mattress from the cats. The cats tend to have certain spots that they sit on a lot, and they're heavy. One of them's 18 pounds, and the other one, and then, you know, like a little ball of little blubber. He's so cute.
So funny. But yeah, it's crazy. So no, thank God. But I feel bad for you about that crazy story.
Oh, you know, it, like I said, it really is more intermittent than chronic. Yeah. There's many, many, many months will go by where I don't. But when I do it like an aggravated assault, so to speak, where I've totally overdone it, or, you know, I can't really run anymore. That's really been the downside to me. I can walk a lot. And by the way, if you notice, I had 111,000 Fitbits last week.
I have not been sinking. I've been doing it and wearing it, but I haven't been sinking.
You need to do that.
You're like, I need to show off.
I'm like a mad woman with this thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's great.
It's been fun. Yeah. It really makes me feel good, though. I mean, walking is really therapy.
Yeah.
It's probably the biggest.
Exactly. That's nice.
Yeah. You know, one thing for you to really pay attention to, though, is because you have these little tykes who probably want to crawl on you and hang on you and pull on you all day long. That's something to be really careful about, is how you hold your children.
Yes.
Because those hip problems and the, you know, between a suitcase, or I mean, like a backpack or a big purse or something like that, and your children, when you're pulling them around, it definitely takes wear and tear.
It's so true. I know, and they say you should switch your purse from like the right shoulder to the left shoulder, and I'm not so good about doing that, but I got to do that. But yeah. All right. Well, let's introduce our new guest before they call.
Okay.
Very excited.
Yes. We have Bill Phillips, psychic medium and author of Expect the Unexpected. Would you like to do the rest of the intro?
So Bill Phillips is a psychic medium whose ability to assist the deceased to communicate with their loved ones has helped many to experience relief and find a valuable sense of closure. With a 6 month plus waiting list, his clients hail from all walks of life and span the globe, from celebrities to entrepreneurs and such countries as India, Africa, Australia, and Iceland. Anything but your stereotypical medium, Bill's fresh, upbeat, and direct approach perfectly complements his warm and extraordinary relatable demeanor. Bill is passionate about what he does. His delivery is described to be that of a close friend, gently helping to put a loved one at ease. For most, Bill's readings are nothing short of life-changing. Their minds open, their ideas amplified, their views of existence altered, and their belief systems reshaped. But most important to Bill is the ability to help, to assist, and realize the deep-seated peace that can be reached through the guidance of a higher power. So this is really exciting.
I'm so excited. I hope he's open to...
All right. Here he is.
There he is.
Bill?
Yes.
Hi. Dr. Deborah.
Hi.
And Coach Kelly. We're so excited to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, we just gave you a wonderful introduction, which you missed, but don't worry, nobody else missed it.
Exactly.
Yes, and
they all got it.
We want to talk about your book, Expect the Unexpected, and we're also wondering if you're comfortable maybe answering a little bit of more personal stuff from Coach Kelly and myself about people we've lost.
You know, sure, I'm always open to seeing, you know, what I'm able to talk about or what I'm able to sense, but I'd love to just keep it about the book, if that's okay, and about, like, my work as a medium.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. So when did you realize that you had a gift as a medium?
Well, I realized I had this this gift when I was 14, almost 15, and my mother passed away. And it was a pretty traumatic story, but I lived in California, and she lived in New York, and she had a lot of drug addiction and alcohol issues in her life, and I hadn't seen her for almost 6 years. And I was able to go and see her the day that she died. And she passed very tragically. So, of course, as a 14-year-old boy, you know, I was just heartbroken over this. And I was her only child. So two nights later, I woke up in the middle of the night to her in the room that I was staying in New York. And she came and gave me a message. And from that point on... I became very just intrigued and just about like obsessed with death and the afterlife and all those things too. I found myself, you know, just kind of having more visitations from her, but not really sure what to make of it. So, when I was 18, I found myself in like a metaphysical, shop, and I was sort of put to the test, and, you know, I always saw on television like the Sixth Sense and these types of pop culture interpretations of what it was like to be a psychic. And most of those interpretations were like, you know, you seeing the person physically and, you know, and the gore that came along with it. And that was never my experience. It was a very gentle, subtle, beautiful experience that was like in my mind. So... when I learned how to trust that subtle experience, it grew and grew, and the you know, the revelations and the validations became life changing for those that had sought me out. So it was just this, you know, all encompassing gift, but I just had to learn how to trust it and get back in tune with it from obviously from the past. You know?
And so I'm dying to know. Dying, no pun intended. But
Kelly, no, don't go, don't go.
I'm fascinated with this type of thing.
Me
Dr.
too.
Deborah knows. Like,
yeah.
I'm so obsessed with this.
Too.
So my question is: Do you receive images, words? Do you hear things? Are you auditory? You know, I'm curious about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I like to give the analogy of playing a game of charades with those that are no longer physically here, but they're using their thoughts and their feelings to communicate with. So for me, I find myself being primarily auditory and visual, which means I'm getting like sounds and visions like simultaneously. And I have to just kind of like shout out whatever I'm hearing and seeing from them. So, you know, to me, it doesn't have any kind of emotional attachment to it. But obviously, I'm able to recognize those thoughts and those sounds that don't have any sort of connection to me or to my life. So it's really a matter of just having an understanding of what, you know, what is my thoughts, what is my sensations, and then what is the sensation or thoughts of spirit. And once I was able to make that
separation, I was online with them instantly. So for me, it's a matter of it's like having thoughts and feelings and emotions and everything happening at one time, and I have to like take that information and then, to the best of my ability, just kind of share it with those that have come to see me.
Wow.
So yeah. When you say visual, does it look like, do you see something in front of you as a visual, or is it in your mind's eye? Like, do you actually see shapes and colors or movement?
It's primarily in my mind that I'm experiencing it, but I do at times see, like, you know, sparks of light or like silhouettes of things, okay. But I don't see them like I would see you physically in front of me. And I always say that I'm kind of grateful for that, because I'd be really freaked out, probably like institutionalized, if I was seeing them that clearly.
Yeah.
So. You know, and so they knew that for me, that was going to be the most efficient way of getting my attention. So I like to give the analogy of, like, you know, when we've all had that one person in our lives lovingly that would be nagging us, whether it be your parents or your lover or something, someone who's just going off on a tangent and it's personal. Mm-hmm. And you have the ability to either listen to it, but most of the time you're probably going to tune out of it and think of something else. So I always give that analogy. And so for me, it's like they're always there. It's never turned off completely, but I'm able to sort of just tune into it or ignore it. And that's how I like to explain how that works for me before I go into actually channeling or audience channeling or private channeling.
So cool. I'd love to know. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
We're both like chomping at the bit.
I'll fight you for the next question.
I'd love to hear some of your favorite stories of contact from people on the other side.
Yeah. There's been so many. That's why I decided to write the book, is because I wanted to show people how my process worked. And, you know, when you go to see a psychic or a medium, you're looking for the validations, of course. But what people don't fully realize is that those validations can take place in the moment or hours, days, weeks, months later. And the reason for that is because there's no time where they're working at. We have calendars and clocks here in the physical world, but where they're at, everything is kind of in one linear line. So when I was giving, you know, when I was channeling and I was trusting what I was receiving from spirit, you know, for the most part, people were able to validate what I was saying, but there's always a few things that, you know, that they were not able to connect with until afterwards. So for me, that took a lot of trust and just letting go of control and knowing that whatever came through for that person was meant for them, and whatever capacity it was, and it may take a few weeks for the full story to come together. So, I always love to give the story of when I was just, like, maybe my second or third person that had come to see me professionally. I was 18. And she sat down with me, and her mother was coming through from spirit. And the message was that she was sending her long-lost love. And the woman rolled her eyes at me, of course. And she was like, oh, that's insane. She's like, it's been almost 10 years since I've heard from him. He just got up and left and never, ever, just literally fell off the face of the earth. And I found out that he had moved to France and all this stuff. So, you know, I said, I know this sounds crazy, but I have to trust what I'm receiving. And, you know, I'm new to this, so maybe I'm getting it wrong. I don't know, but I gave her the message, even down to his name, actually, which was a very unusual name. So she knew that it was, you know, accurate. Uh-huh. And so the next day, at that point, I was working as a part-time barista, and the next day she had called me because and she was hysterically crying. When she had got home that night, on her answering machine was a voicemail from her long lost love that had left almost 10 years previously. And so for me, I was 18 and I was like completely blown away because, you know, this was like a handful of experiences for me that I had to just go with the flow and just trust it. And, you know, if it didn't work out, it didn't work out. This was like my test phase for myself to tell myself, okay, should I be using this for people or not? And so these kind of experiences kept happening and happening. And that was my validation that, you know, obviously this was something way beyond myself. And then shortly after that time, I have a very dear friend of mine who's like a mother to me. And when I told her about this, you know, these experiences, she would have me practice on her. So one day I sat down with her and I started working through this young guy who had passed from a suicide. And he showed me the color of his truck. He showed me where it happened at, like the city. He showed me the gun, all this information. And then he mentioned the name Deborah. And Mary didn't know what I was talking about. And he also gave me his name as well. She didn't know what I was talking about.
Okay.
Until about a week later. And Mary was an accountant. And she happened to have a new client that came in whose name was Deborah. And when Mary was doing her taxes, you know, she had asked, do you have any dependents that you want to claim on your taxes this year? And that's when Deborah just lost it, and she completely just, you know, started bawling. And she told Mary that my son has, you know, recently passed, and everything checked out, you know, the color of the truck, the location, the gun, everything. So, that was, for me, just, like, so incredible to have that validation, even though it didn't happen in the moment. It happened a week or so later, but it was able to bring peace to that mother, and it actually was much more than just that. It actually led her to a box of letters that her son had written to her, because they had not spoken for several months beforehand. Mm-hmm. And it was basically all of these messages of, I'm sorry we couldn't work through this, and I love you so much. So for her, it was just a completely life-changing event in her life. And, you know, that was when I was just discovering this for myself. And you know, the more that I kept trusting it, you know, the more that people heard of me and they started coming to me. But I always had my own fear about becoming public with it, because I was raised by my grandmother, who was very, you know, Christian, and she had a Christian, you know, just viewpoints and her opinions, and I didn't want to, you know, steer her wrong or you know, upset her. So I was also a singer at that time, and so I decided to pursue a degree in opera performance up in San Francisco, and I was 20 at that point. And when I moved up there, you know, I thought, this is great. You know, I can be normal again, and I can sing and everything and be a normal 20-year-old kid. That's not what happened. They actually, people started calling me, and I was giving readings still, and, you know, all signs pointed to this being what I should be doing for people. So once I graduated from school, I just knew that it was the right thing to do. And so I kept just, you know, doing it, and, you know, kind of came out of the closet in that sense, and, you know, the rest has been history. So I'm very grateful to be able to help people in this way, and, you know, it's just been an amazing journey for me.
Wow. Is it the type of thing, like, you know how Doc...
Kelly, you're hogging all the questions.
Oh, are you serious? Am I really? Oh my God, I'm sorry. I didn't even realize. All right, I'll stop with this.
No. I'm teasing you. Go ahead.
Is it the type of thing, like, when, you know, when you see a doctor, you're like, oh, you know, oh, great, you're a dermatologist. I have this mole. Like, is it the type of thing where you tell people I'm a psychic and they're like, oh my God, tell me. Like, do you feel like it's constantly get bombarded?
That's a great question.
All the time. You know, that's a great question. And, you know, I used to, for years, whenever I was out in a social setting and people asked, so what do? I used to just say, oh, I work in grief counseling, because I didn't want to go into it so much where they, you know, were going to pick my brain, because everywhere I went, people just asked me about this and they wanted to know how it worked for them. So, but now, of course, I have no choice but to tell them, yes, I'm a psychic medium. So their questions usually are, if they don't show me their palms first and go, ooh, tell me my future, you know, and I'm like, that's not how it works. You know, and then I go into it and explain how it works. But, you know, people are just curious about, you know, the other side, and how they give us their signs that they're okay, that they've survived, you know, how they can basically enhance their connection or their intuition to spirit, you know. And of course, the biggest question is, are they okay and have they survived? And of course, the answer is yes. And that was another reason why I wanted to share my story, was to just educate people from my reference of how this works, that when we die, we're still very much alive, but we're just in a different form.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a great question. I get it all the time. Well, you probably wouldn't be surprised, but it happens right. daily, I would
sure.
say.
Well, we often get to, can you read my mind right now? Like if you're a psychotherapist.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, I get that a lot. Oh, like, well, what am I thinking? Like, how do I know what you're thinking?
Right, exactly.
I'm a psychologist. So you're going to tell me what you're
hilarious.
Thinking. I'll tell you whether it's good thinking or not.
Exactly.
Right? Anyway, it is hilarious. But I have a burning question here. Okay, so let's just take like a practical experience. So for instance, my mom passed away years ago. My dad, many, many years ago, my dad passed away 4 years ago, but he had remarried and was madly in love with my stepmom, and my stepmom still just grieves his loss. She has like a shrine of his picture, Aww. And she talks to him every day when she comes home, and I mean, it's just, it's beautiful and it's sad at the same time, because she just, I think she feels guilty to let go. But anyway, my curious thing, and not specifically about them, but when she passes, is my mom going to be mean to her, or is my mom going to be nice to her? And what's my dad going to do in all that? Or like just people in general, how do those who got divorced and all that stuff, how do they make peace up there or out
That's
there or wherever?
Great question. Okay. And you know, I always say that first of all, we have more than one soulmate. So people always assume that, you know, there's that one and only person in our life, but the reality is that we've signed up to learn many lessons in our lifetime. And some of those lessons may require that you will be with more than one person in a very profound and miraculous way. So I would say that no, your mom is not going to, you know, hate your stepmom for their connection, but she probably was the one that in some sense orchestrated this into existence for him to have that experience. And that's what I find a lot of the time, is that when you know, when a spouse passes away and then there's one person here, but they're always saying, please, I want you to have that human experience. I want you to be held by someone and have intimacy and someone to share love with. So they will in turn send somebody to you that they know will be the right fit for you and that will help you along your journey and your path. So
nice.
I call them soul groups. You may have heard that term before. And so when we come into a physical body, we come in with a huge group of people that we've been with in previous lifetimes. That's reincarnation. And we sign up for different roles that we will learn with these individuals in this lifetime. So in a sense, I feel that was sort of in a way set up, and that, you know, your mom probably was just helping him find the right connection, you know, in life, or somebody in spirit obviously was behind it. So no, there's only love over there, and they, once they're all up there together, they're gonna laugh at it, you know, and go, oh my gosh, we had a great time. Thank you so much for taking care of him. Aww. I have to leave early to take care of so and so, but you understand. And it's a common mutual respect, and there's no animosity up there.
Boy, I wish we could all do that here on Earth,
life.
Right?
Exactly.
Why can't we just
I know.
That
it would make things so much easier. And that's another big thing from spirit from the other side, from the angels, whoever's there that wants to communicate with you, is that they're trying to help you understand what heaven looks like in their perspective, you know, and they're coming through saying, like, let's say, you know, let's say dad was a golfer or something, but he worked too much and he wasn't able to, you know, do what he wanted for his hobby in life. In spirit, he's probably going to be up there, you know, in his own heaven, putting, you know, golf balls and having a great time up there. And his message is going to be, don't worry about the little things. Don't work so much. Like, do things for yourself. Take time off. Do what you love. You know, be in the moment. Because they're always in the moment. That's all they have in spirit. And they're trying to teach us here how to live to the best of our ability in that same, like, heaven-like space of just love. But of course, you know, it's a challenge because we're in a physical body and we have physical demands and physical needs and everything. And so they understand that. But just to the best of our ability to be able to let go of that as much as possible and just be love and be present and be happy.
That's so nice.
That's beautiful.
So what kind of messages can we expect from our loved ones? I know they come in different ways. Like, is there sort of a common way that our loved ones give us messages?
There's a plethora of ways, actually. You know, I find that probably four of the most common ways are through electricity, because they're able to manipulate electricity where they're at.
Okay. So was nature, that a, I heard a little beep. Maybe that was someone trying to come through.
it's my dad. He's got a burning baby.
Probably. He's messing with the phone line.
That's so funny.
So they will definitely mess with electricity. After my mother passed away, actually, I heard from her her then boyfriend that the phone had rang several times, and different people within the family would pick up the phone, and it was very static, and they heard her voice at the other end of the phone line speaking to them.
Chills.
So that's a common one too, especially right after death, because their energy is very strong to the physical plane.
Okay,
They will also manipulate nature. So let's say that you're out, you know, and you always see the hummingbird that's around you, and you don't know what to make of it. It's just always there. It's their way. These are their symbols. Let's say that, you know, grandma loves hummingbirds. She collected them. She had, like, jewelry of hummingbirds. So she comes back and she sends you hummingbirds to give you her validation that she survived. Mm-hmm. For me, my mother has always shown me white butterflies to get my attention. And I literally see them everywhere. Wow. They're always around me. And in the most uncanny ways, like they like circle around me. They touch my cheek sometimes. They're just always there. It's her way of just being connected to me and having a physical way of showing it to me and also those that are around me as well.
I always see white feathers, and I know it's my grandma.
Really?
Right. Absolutely. Yes, yeah. Feathers are huge sign as well. That comes through a lot in readings.
Oh, really?
Well, white feathers or angel feathers. You know, they call them angel feathers, white feathers.
Uh-huh.
That's a huge, and they usually appear out of nowhere. It's like they'll be on your doorstep or something. You're like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah.
I'm going to start looking for matzo balls on the street.
Matzo balls? Yeah, exactly. A lot of people say, pennies. I hear all sorts of different things. It's really interesting.
Right, but there has to be something that has a complete, you know, connection to you that will basically give you the reassurance or the chill, like, oh my gosh, I know that's my mom, I know that's so-and-so. So they have their direct ways of giving that connection, you know. I was somewhere recently doing an audience reading, and someone's daughter had come through, and she showed me, like, ladybugs everywhere, and everyone went crazy, because they all got tattoos of ladybugs for her, and they just release all these ladybugs in memory of her and everything. So, you know, that was like their, oh my gosh, aha, like, you know, that was just so intense for them. So, you know, music is also a huge way that it comes through as well. It might be that they'll play, you know, their favorite music, or just even lyrics and songs. I find that the spirits like to attach, you know, the lyrics of songs. So you might be having a rough day, and then, you know, you'll turn on the radio and you'll hear something that's so, like, just meant for you in that moment, and that's their way of guiding you, telling you that you're going to be okay, that they're kind of holding your hand through that journey and helping you find the right guidance.
That's beautiful.
So nice.
And on that note, Bill, we are out of time.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So fast.
We bye.
Oh, my gosh. But your book sounds fabulous. Expect the Unexpected. I can't wait to read some more of it. And you're fabulous. And so lucky this planet has you here to help other people get some comfort and reassurance about what that whole process is. And
thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it. And I think you're in the L.A. area. My next event is going to be in Lancaster, actually. I think it's December 9th or something like that. So if you're curious at all, or if you're in the area, you can see how it works in more of an audience platform. But I thank you so much for having me on today and for sharing your light and helping me share my story with others. It was definitely just a great, wonderful opportunity. So I thank you so much.
Beautiful. Sure. And where do people find the book? Expect the Unexpected can be found.
You can find it at any major bookseller or any book retailer around the country.
Beautiful.
Okay, fantastic. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day and happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Bye-bye.
I feel all warm inside.
Don't you? He's so cheerful and, like, fun.
Yeah. I feel like, though, like, for the next few days, I'm probably going to be so mindful and hyper alert to all the little signs that are out there.
You have to be.
Like, you know, I think that I have experienced many times that I have experienced totally thought that my mom or my dad was in the room with me.
Definitely.
Yeah. Sure. And it's so exciting and cool, but I don't know what it means. So anyway, it is pretty cool stuff.
Very cool.
All right. So wait, are you taking off this week? Is that where you're going?
Yeah.
Out of town this weekend.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to send a prayer that London will pee in the potty.
Please, everybody out there.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Another great show.
Yeah.
And who do we have next week?
It'll
be a surprise.
Exactly.
Okay. All it'll be on the description of today's show. I'll put a little blurb on it. All right.
All right.
You all have a wonderful, beautiful Thanksgiving. Remember to be thankful for being here on this planet and being able to have thanks and the opportunity to be grateful.
It's true. All right.
Okay. Love you all. Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.